Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Tillet, the style leader in hospitality workwear and hotel and restaurant uniforms. Learn more at tilletnyc.com.
This is Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues on Heritage Radio Network. I've been a part of the HRN community for 9 years. 9 years. Each week I record my show in the HRN studio made from 2 recycled shipping containers because I'm excited to bring you, our listeners, the most important stories from the world of food. Well, not really food, more like, you know, whatever Nastas and I happen to be doing at that moment, you know, technical issues. All of us here at HRN make food radio because we love it. This year, HRN is celebrating its 10th anniversary, but we need your support to keep food radio going strong for the next decade. Join the HRN community today by becoming a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show some love for my show by selecting Cooking Issues in the designation drop-down menu. And if you hate me but love Nastasia, still do that. Select Cooking Issues in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN. Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from, you know, whenever. From Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez, who is not yet at her mic. Hold on. Oh, she's walking behind me today.
That's so nice.
Oh, my God. She's the queen of politeness today. And what has happened?
Nothing.
Nothing? Ah, we got Paul Adams from, what's your official title over there at the, nowadays?
Official title is Science Research Editor.
Of America's Test Kitchen.
And Cooks Illustrated.
And Cooks Illustrated. And related empires.
Yes.
Okay. We got Kat from the network. What's up?
Hello.
So you have anything to tell us about the network while you're here? Or are you just here to social media evangelize?
I'm doing social media, and there's a special thing happening today. It's the beginning of our summer membership drive. So anyone who's a fan of Cooking Issues should support Cooking Issues and Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member.
Is this going to be one of those things where somehow I only ever end up listening to NPR during their drive and, like, people are going to be bombarded constantly as they listen to our podcast about this?
Well, if we reach our goal, then we'll stop bombarding them.
If we reach the goal in half the time, you hear half the plugs.
Is that what, like, do members get?
We have... This is actually very exciting. We have some brand new member gifts. We've refreshed the things you can get if you become a member. So we're going to have limited edition t-shirts that have this very, like, cool Illuminati pizza logo on them. We also have pins with the pizza Illuminati logo. We also have a Fine and Raw chocolate gift set that has, like, custom HRN branding on it. And then the last new gift is a spice kit from Burlap and Barrel that are single origin spices, which is co-founded by one of our hosts of Why Food.
I've heard good things about them. I've never had their products.
I really like them. I really like their Icelandic kelp that's, like, ground, and it has, like, a sea, you know, ocean umami taste.
Nastasia, what are your thoughts on Iceland?
I don't know. I've never been.
Yeah, but I thought you were anti-Iceland because you saw Bjork in dirty sneakers, and you were like, she's so rich, why is she wearing dirty sneakers?
Yeah, where did we see her?
At one of Questlove's food salons, and you're like, she's so rich, what's with the dirty sneakers?
Yeah. Takes a lot of money to look this poor.
Yeah. And Matt, how you doing? We didn't call you out in the booth.
I'm great. I'm spending time with our first caller. They're already here. It's amazing.
All right. Well, give me 1 second. We'll take the caller. But we'll take the caller first, and then I got to announce we have, like, a thread that's going to be running through a testing thread. So America's Test Kitchen, Paul, is going to be
testing.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, this is Devin. I had a question for you regarding automation in the bartending world.
Okay.
I'm seeing kind of more automation of parts of, you know, coffee shop operations. Do you see the opportunity for stuff like that for bars?
So you're referring to, like, the super automatic machines, like, for instance, the custom ones that Starbucks uses, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, what I've been noticing is kind of a move towards breaking down the components of the drink-making process, so, like, automatic milk frothers, at a very high level, and then volumetric dosing of both espresso and coffee grounds and things like that, instead of a one-unit super automatic like Starbucks had back in the day.
Right. I mean, look, I kind of hope not. I mean, the fact of the matter is that certain parts of bartending are extremely easy to automate. Extremely easy, right? I mean, obviously, that kind of stuff we like to do with a lot of pre-prep and not so easy. But it's easy to automate some of this stuff. But at a certain point, I just assume drink at home. I mean, the question is, what are you trying to do? You know, with your drink. People at home can't make a decent espresso. They just can't do it, right? So, and there's a certain number of actions that a barista is doing every single time, right, to make it, like, it's you know, like they say, golf, it's like a game of golf. It's about repeatability, about being able to, like, repeat the same shot, or I guess bowling is more apt, because bowling really is the same time every time you toss the bowling ball. You're tossing it at the same 10 pins. And so, you know, I guess espresso is more like golf, because things change, the humidity changes, the beans change, the roast changes. But anyway, you're trying to achieve a specific thing every time. And so, you know, at least everyone has a reasonable goal. With a drink, it's not the same. People want their drinks different. It just, you know, it's, there's the banter. So could you make a machine that was like, and like shooting stuff into a glass, chilling it to an exact temperature and handing it to you without human intervention? Sure. And could that take a drink at like a really wretched club, you know, where the person like not only could care less about the drink, could care less about you and kind of wishes you'd fall off the face of the earth, just wants you tip and then wants you to die and have the next customer come up?
But they have these on cruise ships already.
Yeah. And how good are the drinks on cruise ships?
I don't go on cruises, so I don't know.
Well, at your bar, Dave, you have bottled cocktails in a machine. It would also be cool to walk up to the machine and the cocktail gets made by the machine to order.
Right, but we have
and banters with you.
But we, hey, hello, person. I'll tell you what, I hate machines that try to pretend like they're people. You know what I mean? Thank you. You're not a machine. What's thanking me mean? Nothing. You're a machine. The corporation maybe thanks me, which is fine. But remember, a bartender is making the drinks that go into our machines. Could it be mass-produced? Sure. I mean, like, there's lots of mass-produced products that are delicious. For instance, Coca-Cola is, I drink Diet Coke, but Diet Coke, delicious. You know what I mean? If you like diet sodas. Pre-made, put in a bottle, great. And the idea of a bar is that you're supposed to be able to order a wide variety of things. So most of the automation that's coming down the line is like, here are these three mixers, here are these 10 spirits, let me spray them into a cup, and you know, they have those machines that make coffee. Could you do it? Sure. Is it going to replace a bartender in a real bar application? I hope not. Like, you want the... In other words, like, at what point are we drinking... At what point are you, like, just hard drinking alone? You know what I mean? Like, if you're walking up to a machine, like, it's not my bag. You know what I mean?
I think... cocktail machine would be a fun novelty at a bar, but I don't see it replacing the human bartender.
I mean, what it's for is if you wanted to have an environment where you trusted no one to make the drinks, right? So you have complete lack of skill, which is true in a lot of coffee shops, complete lack of skill. And then you also have, a limited menu and a lack of skill on the production side. I'm sure that this machine would do better than the average Giacomo.
If somebody wanted to put an automated bartender in that corner over there, I wouldn't say no.
But the thing is that it would need so much power. You'd need ice, constant supply of ice, constant supply of liquids, rinse downs, all this other stuff.
Automated bar back, too.
They also would take up the entire shipping container.
We can't even get Wi-Fi here.
Strong point.
Yeah.
You know, Anastasia, always keeping it real. That's why I love you. All right. So... while Anastasia and I were in Los Angeles last week, we did an event at Harvard and Stone, Aaron Polsky's joint, where, you know, he viciously underestimated how many drinks we needed, right, Anastasia? Oh, he did not viciously underestimate the amount of drinks that we needed. Definitely did not. Definitely did not. Hey, Anastasia, do me a favor. Wait till we're done to airdrop, because it's going over the front of what I need to read. And I can't read the stuff. You know, no, that's great. I have a picture of Nastasi sent me a picture of Rebecca the Boondoggler and an Applehead. But really, I just need my iPad to function as something I can read the information off of. Okay, yeah. You know, although that pair of shoes from Zappos you're ordering is real nice. This is the more pleasant me. I'm trying to be supportive. So we're in Harvard and Stone, and someone I knew back from the French culinary days, Ivan Makawa, he has a place. So his family is of Japanese extraction via Peru, where they picked up Peruvian, like, rotisserie chicken technologies, right? Then came to Los Angeles and settled in Koreatown. So he took over from his dad. They have a restaurant, Pollo a la Brasa, you know, which is the Peruvian chicken, Western in L.A., right? And so it is a Peruvian chicken joint in Koreatown run by a family of Japanese extraction. That's kind of the, like, classic kind of, I guess, L.A. mashup of what's going on. We didn't get to have his chicken, although next time I go out there, Nastassi, we should stop by and have his chicken. Here's why I like the guy. Two things. One, he brought us a present, which is why I'm talking about it now. Two, the guy makes all of his own rotisserie parts. So he's like custom fitting out all of his rotisserie. And then I looked them up on the internet. Like, they hand, like, chop all their own wood because they do wood fired on their chicken. So I want to go check it out. But the reason we're talking about it today is that he brought us at Harvard and Stone and handed me a bunch of MREs. Now, you know what MREs, right? Meal ready to eat. These are the military rations made by the Warnick Corporation. Now, Warnick makes civilian rations, right? But you cannot buy, legally anyway, you cannot buy the military versions. It says right on it, warfighter recommended, warfighter tested, warfighter approved. And then it says, where does it say? Somewhere it says, you cannot buy or sell this. Oh, U.S. government property. Commercial resale is unlawful.
What is the difference between military rations and civilian rations?
Well, if you listen to the Warnick Company, they say there's not a big difference, but yet everyone wants to buy the military version, I guess, because it's illegal to sell them, right? So apparently they're difficult to source. I don't know where Ivan sourced this. I didn't ask him.
I wouldn't know where to get civilian rations either.
But when he hands this to me, he said this to me. He said, listen, don't open the package till you get home. He says these things because they contain a heater in them, right?
Right.
So these are allowed on an airplane as long as they haven't been opened. But as soon as they've been opened, they're no longer allowed on the airplane. So, you know, for those of you that don't know, the Museum of Food and Drink has long been interested. We haven't done an exhibition on it yet, but, you know, I've personally been interested in military food for a long time. Some of the great advances in food technology, think canning, right, are a result of needing to feed troops on, you know, when they're far away, when you don't necessarily have access to local produce. Also, you know, when you fight a war, that's why in the old days, when you fought a war, you took all of the crops and cows and pigs and whatever and just ate them. You just ate the land as you went. You know what I mean? But
yep.
These MREs are, this is a lot lighter. Feel this, Paul.
It's quite light.
Apparently, it's also completely self-contained, so we're going to try to do this in a completely... I have a
very light stew.
I have a knife.
Is there liquid in there?
No, that you need. So it's everything but the liquid. This is menu number 9, beef stew, ragu de boeuf. It really says that on the menu. It says ragu de boeuf, MRE, and we're going to open it up. I have a knife with me because, of course, I'm a breathing human. But it says that I don't need a knife to open it, and indeed I don't. So it's in this tan pouch. Let's open up, take a look here. Okay. Ooh, it comes with a spork. No, a spoon, sorry. Come on, Warnick. Step up your game. Give me a spork. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Although, a spork, if you don't need it, is inherently unsatisfying. Okay, honey mustard and onion pretzel nuggets. So apparently these are ready to eat right now while we're waiting. Nastassi, you want to crack open these honey mustard and onion pretzel nuggets? Let's see what else we got in this little magic package. Oh, Jesus!
Nuggets all over the floor.
So it turns out Nastassia shares something with my son Dax, which is opens packages by like just like mega rip. There are pretzel nuggets all over the floor. I hope you don't have too many mice problems in here, Matt.
This one,
I'll bring Daisy in here later to clean it up.
Did not.
Yeah. Okay, hand me a nugget. How are these guys?
This one fell on here.
Wait. One of you try one because it's going to make mouth noises.
Paul.
You know everyone hates mouth.
Oh, God,
thank
Paul.
Chocolate hazelnut cocoa beverage powder, naturally and artificially flavored. Here's how you do it.
Try that one more time. I'll open my mouth.
Why did it?
Just throw it right in.
Directions for use. Allow water just chemically purified to stand 30 minutes before adding to powder. Tear pouch. Oh, mouth noise. That was Paul. Mouth noises are so rough. People hate the mouth noises. Tear pouch at notch, open zipper, add 6 ounces of hot or cold water to fill line, close zipper, shake to mix, consume promptly within 1 hour, or I guess all hell breaks loose. All right, Kat, you make this, or have Nastasia make it, because you're on the social media machine. Ooh, what's this? Do not overfill. Oh, this is the heater. This is the ready-to-eat magnesium heater, which we're going to learn to use in a second here. Okay. Oh, this is the beef stew envelope. What's in an MRE? Oh, it's got all the beautiful. All right, Paul, you want to set up this? It looks like a larger version of a McDonald's apple pie thing, right? And this is the actual beef stew. That's the envelope to hold it because I guess it gets hot, right? Hold this. Anyway, Nastasia, how's that smelling over there? How are the pretzel nuggets? We got blackberry jam. Why, I don't know.
Does any of this stuff go together?
Peanut butter. Why, I don't know. Nut raisin mix. That's clearly ready to eat. And here's our packet with salt, chewing gum to freshen your breath, and Tabasco sauce. All right. I'm grooving on it. And then, multi-grain snack bread. That's what the PB&J is for. So you got multi-grain snack bread. Let's take a look at this. That's not bread. That's not bread. That's like a cracker on roids. Let's see. Ooh.
It's snack bread.
Okay.
That's what they had in Lord of the Rings, right?
Imagine if Fig Newton material without the fig part was just inflated to a thicker thing. It has the exact texture of like a Fig Newton cookie. Nastasia is a fan. All right, so let's get this going here. Warning, vapors released contain hydrogen, a flammable gas. Do not light a fire while you're doing it. All right, I'm ripping this guy open. Using no equipment other than just the water that I've recently chemically purified by passing it through my body. All right, I'm kidding. Hand me the beef pouch. Now you put the beef pouch into the packet. Are you getting all this on radio? Can you see this? There you go. All right, now,
it's just like a small little envelope. That's a heating element?
Yeah, that's a heating element. Now watch. Give me the water, please.
Right.
All right. Ready?
Looks like
Nastasia, holy Justino.
Wow.
What was that?
Why don't you keep holding it in your hand rather than taking something that doesn't have a base and resting it upright?
Nastasia, this is Wine Santa all over again.
So what happened, people, was Nastasia took something which is the equivalent of balancing a single piece of paper and rested it upright by a bunch of cables. That's what's happened. All right, now I'm filling up this thing. This is water activated, so I got to fill it up to the fill line. Let me see here. All right, God, it's probably enough. Ellis, Paul. Got to get the heater all wet. Neat, 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 neat. All right, now, supposedly, this is going to work now. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's getting hot?
Yeah, it's getting hot, and it's filling up with gas. We have the sleeve, Oh, Jesus, on a stick.
And it's...
I'm not supposed to say that.
Bursting.
I'm told that that's an offensive thing to say. Okay, all right, now it's got to be propped up. Kat, can you prop this up against a rock? Oh my God! You can smell it, right?
No,
that's the
chocolate.
That's the chocolate. No. Whoa, whoa, whoa! Smell that. It smells like you ever have one of those exploding can. Oh, vapors are coming out of it. You ever have one of those exploding cannons that uses like an acetylene reaction where it's got the. You know what I'm talking about? They're called bangsite. They use. Oh my God! It's going out of my head. The name of the chemical that when you add water produces carbide. Yeah, and then you smell that?
Yeah.
It smells like kids. No. Like this. Propped up against a rock. Like that. The water has to completely cover the heater. All right. Now, Paul's going to hold that in midair for 12 minutes while it heats up. Well, Nastasia cleans the chocolate beverage off the ground, and I answer some further questions.
Oh, is there a chocolate beverage? Can I have some?
Well, you have to suck most of it off the floor. Here, why don't you pour it in the cup? Let's try it. Okay.
Was a cup provided?
The cup was not provided. You're supposed to be able to drink it out of the pouch.
Can I drink it out of the pouch?
Oh, Jesus! that one was not Nastasia. Okay, let's try this. All right, Paul. This is the first taste of the...
That pouch looks difficult to drink out of.
Well, you're first of all, you're out in the field.
Yeah.
You just mix it in there and slug it down. This isn't meant, this is not like...
But it's got like a wide mouth. Why don't they make... Does it need to be pre-mixed?
It should be called meal ready to clean.
No taste whatsoever.
No. I didn't shake it.
You didn't shake it. That's what it said to do. Roll the... Hey, Kat, pour this back in, roll the top over, and then shake it such that you actually distribute the powder on the inside.
They actually spend several weeks of basic training just teaching you how to do a meal ready to eat.
Yeah. Okay. All right. How's that? Is that warming up there, Paul?
Yeah, it's becoming uncomfortable to hold.
Sweet. All right.
8 more minutes.
You're supposed to prop it up against a rock.
Is there a rock in the kit?
We have a Buddha statue.
You know what?
We're offending all religions. That's
Ganesh. Oh, God.
You want to just put it down?
God.
No, I'll hold it.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Tillet, the style leader in hotel and restaurant uniforms. Tillet is redefining workwear for the hospitality industry, ensuring that you and your team feel great from stove to street. Tillet is a full line of workwear clothing from pants to work shirts, chef aprons, jackets, dresses, chef coats, and more, with over 95% of their garments produced in the USA. Each hotel and chefwear collection is timed with the seasons, comprised of exceptional functional fabrics and built to last. Custom uniforms can be tailored for your restaurant, hotel, or store. Learn more at tillitnyc.com. That's tillitnyc.com.
All right. Joe Ankowitz writes in about his SodaStream. I'm looking to stop paying for SodaStream refills. I'm hesitant to go full on and install a carbonation system in my plumbing. To my plumbing because I rent in New York City. The smell of the MRE is so intense now. You smell that? I love it. It smells like exploding stuff. It smells like my childhood where I would light everything on fire. Who else had that childhood? Is it just me?
My brother.
Yeah. What's up, Matt's brother? I also have zero plumbing knowledge, and it seems like that job might be above my pay grade. I was thinking of attaching a CO2 tank to my SodaStream with an adapter, but I keep my SodaStream under the sink for space reasons, and I feel like it would be a pain to reach under the sink to turn the valve open and closed on a tank every time I want soda, which is usually multiple times a day. There are adapters online that allow you to refill SodaStream canisters directly with a tank, which seems like a good option, although I don't know if there are any dangers. There are. or if it will really work. It will. Wanted to get your opinion on which of these options you think is best, and also ask where to get food-grade CO2. Food-grade CO2 in the New York City area. Thanks as usual, Joe. Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, there's no such thing as food. People are going to yell at me really badly, especially the sellers of food-grade CO2. There's no real difference between food-grade CO2 and any other grade of CO2. The difference is the tank. So tanks that have impurities in them can put off flavors, like if there's oil or any sort of other impurities. So it's really all about the cleanliness of the tank. That's the important thing, right? And I have used tanks from welding shops for 20 years, roughly. And you know what? They make carbonated water. They work. So what are the dangers? If you want to fill a soda, first of all, if you want to fill a CO2 tank, the couple of problems. I've done it many, many times. You don't want to overfill a tank, right? So you have to be able to, first of all, like you should really get a filling rig if you're going to fill it again and again, because what you want to do is add some CO2 to the tank, purge it, and then fill it again. And then be able to vent off, because you want to make sure that you don't have any air in, because the air is going to ruin you. You have to keep the tanks frozen before you fill them, such that the CO2 wants to stay in them. Otherwise, it's hard to get the CO2 in. Also, the tank you're filling from, either you have to be comfortable turning it upside down to get the CO2 to flow into it. Otherwise, what's going to happen? Put it this way. If you take CO2, you know, depending on the temperature, let's say it's at 800 PSI, in your CO2 cylinder, your big one, it's a liquid. Above it is gas. If you just then put a tank on it and say go, what's going to happen is that it's going to fill with 800 PSI of CO2 gas, and then nothing else will happen. And because nothing else is happening, you're not filling it. You're having a very small amount of CO2. It will never fill. So if you chill it down, as the CO2 gas hits it, it will condense, turn to a liquid, and you will constantly fill it up until it is either the same temperature as the cylinder or it stops filling. You also, to really do this right, you want what's called a siphon CO2 machine that has a siphon CO2 tank that has a spigot running all the way to the bottom, such that the first thing it draws off is liquid, not gas. Otherwise, you need to turn the tank upside down to have the liquid flow out of it. which she, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to say I haven't done it because I have done it many times, but I'm not sure if it's safe. It probably is not. Secondly, if you overfill a tank, what happens is the tanks are meant to have a certain amount of expansion room based on what percentage of what the pressure is of that at a particular temperature. So if you don't have enough expansion room in that tank, as soon as the temperature goes up, I mean, even a little bit, even up to like, you know, 90, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, you're going to blow the overpressure valve. When you blow the overpressure valve, it's spent and you have to redo it. It's also impressive, right? So you don't want to have that happen because it doesn't just leak down to a safe pressure. It's like, I'm going to dump all this CO2 into your kitchen right now. And it's not what you would want to have happen. So I would not have it happen. Now, also, if you're filling tanks and you don't get them hydro-tested regularly. So, like, let's say you were going to go buy a paintball tank, which is what a lot of people do. Paintball tanks, small ones, are so cheap that they don't hydro-test them. If a tank becomes extremely old, it's no longer in spec, will it explode? Probably not. But there have been cases where old non-hydro-tested tanks have exploded. And again, this is not a pretty situation. You don't want to have it happen. So what I would do, just to make your life easy, is I would get the adapters to fill the adapters to go from a soda stream to a paintball tank. And then I would get the, you know, biggest paintball tank that can fit into your soda stream in lieu of its internal tank. And then you can get those things refilled at sporting goods shops. And if you really want to, there are people online who will sell you a tank that's already been cleaned out to make sure it doesn't have any oil. And then that's a decent way to go. Of course, the real way to do it is to get a 10 to 20 pound CO2 tank, 20 pounds, the most economical, and stick it under your sink and do carbo caps instead of using the SodaStream technology. But if you're wed to SodaStream, and people who are wed to SodaStream, they just can't get enough of the farting noise as that thing tells you that it's carbonating, and for some reason they love it. And people who aren't used to the carbonator caps, the ones that I use, they're like, it's too hot to do it, it's hot. It takes about 10 minutes, people. 10 minutes and you're fine with the carbonator system. But whatever. Whatever.
10 minutes to get used to it, not 10 minutes to create a bottle of soda.
Yeah. 0 minutes to create a bottle of soda. 10 minutes to get used to that technique as opposed to the soda stream. And it is super cheap and people, then you can carbonate cocktails, then you can carbonate fruit juice, you can carbonate anything. You can recarbonate your wine, you can post-carb your champagne if it goes too flat. I mean, that's my recommendation. Oh, by the way, while I was looking up CO2 safety, and again, like I looked it up, there have been things where, you know, they've blown up and killed people, but it's extremely rare.
Can you hydro-test your own tank?
You can hydro-test your own tank, but it won't be certified. It won't get a stamp because you are not certified to hydro-test things. But if you fill your tank with water, use a hydraulic press with a hydraulic cylinder with a very, you know, with a good gauge, stick your tank underwater and then pressurize it to a particular PSI, you know, you can easily hydro-test. The point of hydro-testing is that pressurized water stores very, very little energy. So when a tank fails, when it's got water in it, it just goes poof. And water sprays out, it comes out, right? And then immediately the pressure drops. When you pressurize something with gas, this is why the chicken gun that Nastassia and I are gonna fire is so tremendously dangerous, because when you store vast quantities of compressed gas, right, it's very compressible, so there's a lot of extra energy to release. This is why compressed gas, PVC, for instance, is rated for water and not for gas, specifically because the rupture mechanism of PVC is brittle, and if there's gas in it as opposed to liquids, when it does rupture, it goes all to hell and gone, like through your eyes, through your neck, through your face, you know what I mean? So it's like through your chest.
Through the chicken.
Ooh. I don't have time to talk about nuclear war and calculators, but I got some good nuclear war calculator information coming up later for people who are interested in nuclear war calculation. Which, by the way, for people my age, nuclear war was the thing you thought about growing up. Like when I was growing up, every day I would plan with compasses, like where in the fireball range I was compared to New York City.
What's our plan?
Well, if you're in New York City, so the real question is what kind of weapon is the person going to use against us, right? So if they're using a suitcase-style bomb with a ground burst in New York City, and they try to, like, make a point by doing it in a very, like high-building canyon place, turns out no one has ever run those tests. So there might be some people doing computer modeling now of a ground burst of a ground burst of a small suitcase style weapon in a very densely built area. But most of the, almost all of the tests are even built on the there that are done. We're done on kind of 50 style, like Levittown American, like widely spaced wood building villages with occasional concrete structures that were fabricated out in the desert or, wartime experience from Hiroshima and Nagasaki or airburst tests. So there's almost no real data on what would happen if someone suitcase bombed us. When I was a kid, I wasn't worried about terrorism. I was worried about the Soviet Union throwing, like, you know what MIRVs are? So it used to be that way back in the day, missiles had one warhead on them, right? And then they went to this technology called MIRV where they would throw one missile up and then it would split into a bunch of warheads. And so they didn't need just one warhead landing on New York. You were going to be circled in multiple megaton range, not kiloton, megaton range hydrogen bombs, in which case, Nastasia, the long story, we live inside of the crater. So not a lot you can do. The survival plan is, use your last 15 minutes wisely.
I thought you were going to take a boat.
If it's going to be something that you can get away from, right? I wasn't going to go into it.
Yeah.
How did this come up?
No.
Exploding
no
CO2.
No,
this
no
is just
no,
in
no
Dave's brain.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I was just...
Okay.
Yeah.
I went through a... Dave.
Speaking of questions. The military...
Yeah.
How much longer on the MRE?
How much longer on the MRE?
I don't know. I don't know. Wait. Is it still liquid? Is it still hot?
It's still liquid and hot.
Okay.
Is it supposed to consume the...
It's not going to consume the liquid as far as I know. It'll consume some. It's making hydrogen gas. It's getting that from somewhere. Presumably it's ripping the oxygens off, oxidizing something in there, probably the magnesium, and then producing hydrogen gas, which, that's why you're not supposed to put an open lighter. How's your beverage, Paul?
The chocolate beverage is terrible.
Let me taste this chocolate beverage. It's supposed to be nutritious. This is like Ensure.
Oh, that explains it.
It's just like, this would be good with milk. It's like quick in water.
It's like not enough quick in water.
Well, I'm sure there used to be more quick back before the initial spill happened. Nastasia, what do you think?
Oh, did you spill the flavorful part?
Most of the flavor went on the floor.
Oh,
the ground smelled amazing.
I'm going to say that tastes fine. That tastes like quick.
I think that tastes fine, yeah.
Do you like strawberry quick or chocolate quick?
I love strawberry quick, but I had a terrible allergic reaction to it when I was a toddler, and now I'm afraid of it.
By the way, very soon, people, maybe as soon as Thursday, and we'll live douche it out, I'm going to go through my cherry test where I see whether or not this 8 months of weekly shots in the back of my arm have caused me to be no longer allergic to cherries.
What does the test consist of?
Eating cherries at a doctor's office. This way, like, if I die, they can bring me back to life. Epinephrine is the Narcan of allergic cherries. So they just, like, you sit there, like, you collapse on the floor, boom, they hit you with the epinephrine, and then ship you off to a hospital.
That sounds great.
It's going to be amazing.
Are you providing the cherries, or does the doctor have
cherries? The first cherry I've had, Paul, in 16 years, and you think I'm going to let a doctor buy it?
They might have special pharmaceutical grade cherries.
Paul, have you met me? You know I'm going to buy the best cherries that is possible to buy. I'm going to feel each one.
What are the best cherries that are
possible? Oh my God, Paul. Like the difference between a crap cherry and a great cherry is like the difference between, crap coffee and great coffee. Even worse, like a bad cherry, it just has no flavor. It's just like a bag of water. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But whereas like that cherry where the skin is still taut, there's still texture to the flesh, and it's got a nice acidity and sweetness. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
and the feeling, I'm not going to do this at the doctor's office because she'll get pissed, but the feeling of just, boom, spitting those seeds out. Boom. If I can be that guy going down the highway again like I was when I was young at 70 mile an hour, boom, shooting seeds out of the side of my window. Oh, my God. Is there any better feeling? Really? Is there?
No.
Oh, my God.
Dave shot seeds across this whole country when he was younger.
You know what? I'm Davey Cherry Seed, spitting them out the window. In fact, I told this, I think, before. Like, I used to live on the 20th floor of a garment district building, when my wife and I had our first illegal loft. And the entire next, section of the block, instead of had a building, had a single-story loading dock. So we had a great view. Nastasia would have loved it because it's on the west side and she only likes living on the west side. But we used to spit our cherry seeds straight out the window because what's it going to hit? Nothing. There's no one down there. That's a great feeling. Spitting cherry seeds out of a window in Manhattan without actually damaging anyone. No cherry trees grew on the top of the loading dock to my chagrin. Anyway.
That's too bad.
One more thing on the CO2. So some people try to say that the expensive CO2 adapters are worth the money because they are quote-unquote lead-free. The vapor pressure of lead at the temperatures that we're talking about and the small amount of lead that is required in free machining brass is, like, on a rough order, zero. So I would just say no liquid is ever touching it. Only CO2 is touching it. So someone tell me I'm wrong, but a little bit of lead in a fitting that's never going to touch anything but gas and never going to get hot, I'm going to go ahead and say don't worry about it. What do you think, Paul?
Your adapter from what to what?
Adapter from the brass adapter from the paintball tank to the SodaStream. Like, some people are saying that their adapter is worth the $50 instead of the $15 because it has lead-free brass. Most brass, almost all brass back in the day, had a small amount of lead put into it to make it much easier to machine, which, by the way, that stuff, like marine brass, super easy to machine. A dream on a lathe. But, you know, I just don't think that there's going to be any cross-contamination because all that's touching it is a gas at low temperature and the vapor pressure of lead, which it's not even 100% lead. It's a little bit of lead in the brass to help it machine, zero. So you're not going to really get any cross-contamination. The reason you're paying $50 to the other one is that that person is probably a human. They're making a small number of them. They're not a large corporation. So if you want to support them for having the idea, I would do it for that reason and not for the lead. We ready to eat this sucker?
We can try.
All right, while you're doing that, Matt writes in about the vermicular, which sounds kind of gross, vermicular. It sounds like vermiculite or vermicelli, like worms, right?
It sounds deliciously like worms. What's gross about worms?
Okay, are you one of those worm eaters? Paul, I bet you're one of those worm eaters. How hot is that? Uncomfortably hot?
Uncomfortably hot, yeah.
Nice. That's my favorite kind of. Let me see. I'm trying to judge now Paul's temperature. That's warm enough. By the way, the meal is, as they say, ready to eat, meaning you don't have to heat it. It's safe to eat without it. Are we going to pour this into a cup, or do you want to eat it out of the pouch? We've had extremely bad luck eating things out of the pouch. Do you want to try it?
Yes.
All right. I'm not going to tear it. I'm going to cut it with a knife, even though, like, is that, am I really, am I?
No, tear it.
Tear it? Okay, Nastasia. If I tear this and it pours beef ragu all in my lap, Nastasia, it'll be the best day of Nastasia's life. Even better than the day Peter walked in on me in the toilet. Right? All right. I got a small opening in the top of this meal ready to burn my crotch.
Careful.
Nastasia, I'm going to use the
damn
knife.
We have some scissors, Matt?
No, I don't need scissors. I got a knife, but Nastasia just wanted me to use no tools. Oh! All right. Ready? Give me a spoon here.
It's right there.
Let's use the included. All right, we won't use the included spoon because we have to unwrap it. Hand me a spoon.
It smells like dog food.
It does not smell like. It smells like delicious, like Dinty Moore. It smells like Dinty Moore. Are you familiar with Dinty Moore?
Mm-mm.
Hold on, people. Talk while I eat this. Describe, Nastasia.
It does not smell great.
Hey, what? I'm gonna give it a thumbs up, Nastasia.
I don't want any. Paul will.
Nastasia is gonna try this too next.
Paul will like it.
Why don't you try it? It tastes like freaking canned beef stew. I'm going to say this is
going to be great on social media.
Video. I'm going to say this is good.
I want to say that I've put the unboxing video of the MRE on our IGTV so people can go watch it there. They want the full effect.
So Nastasia now is realizing that, and I'll tell you something, Warnick Corporation, God bless you, you're not afraid of salt. That's
really good.
It's good. It is a salted beef stew. I'm going to give this one Cooking Issues approval. That is like, you know, that tastes like a decent canned beef stew.
Yeah.
Not grizzly.
Yep. It's very well thickened.
It's very thick.
Some sort of.
It's salty.
Filler.
Matt's yep. trying it. He came out of the booth into the shipping container to try it.
I don't know.
Definitely
what do you think,
got
Matt?
My salt ration for the day.
Right. I'm for it. The only person who hasn't tried it is Kat because she's a secret vegetarian.
Right.
They make vegetarian versions of this, by the way, for those who are interested. I didn't bring chicken with feta. I brought beef stew. I thought feta would be more polarizing.
What else is in our meal?
Paul, look and eat away and make comments. I got to do these questions. I recently came across vermicular cast iron induction system. It looks interesting, but a bit spendy. Have you had any experiences with this equipment that might warrant its place in a home kitchen? I already have a low temperature cooking capability, so I'm wondering if there's an advantage to having a vermicular induction unit. Question two, if Nastassi allows it, which she will not, but she will like this question, so I'll do it anyway, and we will answer them in reverse order.
Yeah, do it in reverse.
Please explain the context behind the Boondoggle song that was posted on Instagram during your LA tour. I was simultaneously amused and confused. So, a boondoggle, Nastassia, define boondoggle.
I think it's a trip that's not worth our time.
It's anything that is, you know, not worth the time or expense, usually complicated, and just not worth it. It's derived from the little keychain that the scouts used to make, that now you've seen them. Remember when you were a kid, you used to weave those plastic things into those kind of barrel-shaped key fob? Yeah, yeah. Technically, those are boondoggles, right? And the original, the Scout newspaper was called the Boondoggle. The Boondoggle then got applied to the little thing that you make, and then somehow during the 30s, that got transmogrified into meaning something that's a waste of time or useless, especially something that requires energy to do and is not worth the investment.
Wait,
okay.
Why is Rebecca the boondoggle?
We are getting to...
Which one?
Windy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We could sing boondoggle to anything. So the first time we went to L.A., intrepid bartender, friend, former BDX, now major domo bartender, Austin Henley, referred to the party that we threw as a...
sub-party.
Which, by the way, is the greatest insult you can give to a party. It's a sub-party.
Wow.
I was like, Austin, good punning, my friend. Good punning. So, and in fact, it was. And that was the infamous... like the infamous circulator set to Fahrenheit instead of Celsius event, among many, many, many others. So because that, look, anytime Booker and Dax does an event outside, we have to pay for it. I don't know whether you understand this, but when you do stuff, you have to pay for it, right? So we have to pay for us to go out, the crew, whatever we're doing. And right now, like, we're pushing Spinzalls, because we need more people to buy them. But the fact of the matter is, we know we're never going to sell that many. We know that it's, you know, just like us, trailing edge technology niche, right? Like, you know, we know what we are. But, like, honestly,
you
like...
You need to get the existing customers to buy more and more Spinzalls.
Well, you know what? That's an interesting point. So, I think that the truth of the matter is that when bigger restaurants take it on, they need to kind of Lay's potato chip them a little bit. Like, to run a program like the one we have at existing conditions, you need, like, four, right?
At least.
Three to run and one to have as a spare while I fix the other one because...
I'd say 12.
You can do a double fisting campaign where everyone should have two.
But my point is that if we sold every single Spinzall that we've made, we still have to, like... We're not getting rich. We're not being Bernie Madoff here with our Spinzalls like they accused us of in with our Searsalls. Ain't nobody getting rich off of centrifuges. Just put it that way, right, Nastassia? It's the next product, people. It's the next one. It's going to push Nastassia and I over the top. It's going to make us happy. What are you going to do with your money once we make the next product?
Helicopter.
Oh, my God. We're not going to get helicopter rich no matter what we do. Nastassia has been hanging out with billionaires too long and wants to become helicopter rich. Ain't nothing we're doing is going to make us helicopter rich. Although that would be nice. Mm-hmm. Maybe rich enough to rent a helicopter every once in a while. You know what I mean? I need to get out of the city.
We could turn the top of this shipping container into a helipad for you.
That was one of my get out of New York. So by the way, people who live in New York, right, you want to have a get out plan. So like Nastassia's weaker friends, Phil, right, just basically said they were going to give up. Like, if they knew they only had 15, 20 minutes. Nastassia and I have a plan. So the various plans we have, and you guys rate it, right?
Because the blast range is...
Well, there's blast, but it could just be something's going to happen, like a dirty bomb, something like this. You just need to get off the city, right? And for those of you that don't know, getting out of this city when there's traffic can be problems. I like the parachute backpack with the propeller, because then you just go up to whatever top you're building. You seen these things? Parachutes with a propeller on the back. Have you seen these things?
Sounds scary.
Have you seen it? Have you? No, they're amazing. Anyway, no. The other one is you can buy small with pressurized canisters, inflatable boats with outboards, where you just store it in your closet, wheel it to the river. Nastassia lives near a river. I live near a river. Out. That, I think, is the best. If you are very rich and you live in this city... It's not for that. Let's say you are rich and you come from not in New York City and you move to New York City and your parents are worried about you and you are very, very rich. There is a dude whose business is, you know what a Zodiac boat is?
No.
Zodiac boats, there's various varieties of Zodiac boats, inflatable, but then also aluminum pontoon Zodiac boats. The Coast Guard uses them. They're indestructible and require very little maintenance. This dude will keep one gassed up, ready to go with stuff at a dock such that when you hit the you know, GTFO button, right, it's always there ready, and you just right out of the city on your own Zodiac. How sweet is that?
Nice.
I have a personal submarine docked in the East River.
Oh, yeah? Have you chopped up a journalist and thrown her body parts overboard? Are you Danish? Do you remember that story?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you, like, have you murdered a journalist? Are you Danish?
He never answered, by the way.
He never answered. Okay, so the vermicular, so the boondoggle is, because even if we sold all of the spinzalls that we make, we still wouldn't be making enough money to pay for promotional tours for them, you know what I mean? So inherently, anything we do that's spinzall related is a boondoggle, like inherently.
And you call Rebecca, our PR person.
With love, we all call her the boondoggler. And now it's a thing of love. We called her that on the air when we did our LA show. Mm-hmm. So now it's out
she's
in the open.
Yeah, she's in the show notes as the boondoggler.
The boondoggler. We said, I love the boondoggler. Boondoggler, good business. Good business. So now, the other question you had on the vermicular cast iron induction system.
Steve.
Okay, Jeebus. So the vermicular cast iron system is a, Paul, eat some of this other stuff. Let me know how it is. I never had a pretzel. Was it good? Was it a flavored pretzel nugget?
The pretzel is a totally fine pretzel.
Pretzel is probably the best part.
It tastes like a pretzel you buy at the grocery store.
You know why?
Why?
It's probably a pretzel that you buy at the grocery store.
There's a sugar-free raspberry beverage base.
Oh, make it right now in the 2 minutes you have remaining.
And some Tabasco and Chiclets.
Don't mix those together. The Chiclets are to clean our breath of the Dinty Moore stew when we're done. But there's only two. So you can really only eat one with a friend. Unless you're one of those people that bites Chiclets in half.
Dave, question.
Okay. You're not one of those people, right?
No.
So the vermicular is a cast iron. It's okay. Imagine an induction cooker, but an induction rice cooker or an induction crock pot, which, by the way, my Zojirushi induction rice cooker is sick. I love it. But with a cast iron pot instead of a regular rice cooker pot and some more controls on it. I think it looks like a very well-built piece of equipment. It's, again, it is for rich people. Like, if you wanted to have a rice cooker that like also had a really cool cast iron pot that you could put into the stove as well, then I'd say it looks like a nice piece of equipment. If you're looking for it to do something that your rice cooker can't do, then I would say no, it's not worth $675. I would rather spend the $200 and something on the largest Zojirushi rice cooker, use that for what that's for, and since you probably already have a Le Creuset somewhere, using that for your stovetop wear. But it looks like it, and by the way, you can use that on a regular induction unit as well, so, you know, there's that. So
what is vermicular about it, though?
Nothing, as far as I can tell. It's just a name. It looks like a very nicely designed, very well put together, Instapot sort of a thing with a cast iron, very well machined cast iron thing. So I'm going to say, if you have the money, do it. I mean, it looks nice. I would be proud to have one on my counter. Marcel from the Hudson Valley writes in about oat milk. Hey, any chance you could get Dave to answer this question? This may have been discussed before, but please tell me everything you know about how to make good oat milk, like Oatly, in a commercial restaurant setting. That is a highly flavored raspberry beverage. I can smell it across the room.
But
you
it's
mix
like
it?
Kool-Aid powder, right?
It's concentrated. You're supposed to mix it instead of just eating the powder.
Well, there's another cup with some water.
Dave, you have 1 minute.
Jeez, Oatly in a commercial restaurant setting. I'm especially interested in semi-long-term stability. Thanks, Marcel from the Hudson Valley. Okay, so here's the thing. Oatly, which is the oat milk that the baristas use, is not made like a regular human being. There's a patent on it, right? So they use whole oats, and then they grind them up, and then they enzymatically treat them with two things. One, a protease, which...
How did you find this information?
Because it's patented. Anytime there's a patent, you can go on. So you can't, by the way, if you actually try to do what they're doing, you're infringing on their patent because the patent is very recent. They applied for the patent in 2014 and they got the patent in 2017.
So anybody can find this information?
Stop. So listen. So they deamidate the protein, and what that means, you have to wade through a bunch of stuff. When you deamidate the protein, you're, cereals have a lot of proteins that are liable to this process called deamidation. When that happens, they the proteins partially unfold and they become better emulsifiers. So they don't have to. The ingredient label list on Oatly is very, very clean, right? Let's see, I think I have it here so I can read it maybe, but I have to sift through. Oh, yeah, oat base, water, and 10% oats. So Oatly uses whole oats that they grind, soak, blend, right, and they treat with enzymes in that state. So they're using a 10% oat base, but
one protease, and what's the other enzyme?
They add something to break down the starch. They add some sort of amylase to it. So they have an amylase to break down the starch, increase the sweetness, probably also reduce some of the gumminess in it. And then they have a protease, which adds an emulsifier to it without having to use an emulsifier. So it also theoretically increases the protein content that's soluble. So it's increasing the protein content. However, if they also then add rapeseed oil. The reason they're adding rapeseed oil is because there's not very much oil in it. So if you want it to act like milk, you have to add milk. Now, they don't add an emulsifier to it. Well, they add calcium phosphates. That's probably adding some emulsification to it, salt, and vitamins. But they're trying to get some emulsification out of the proteins that they've deamidated, right? Now, that one of the tricks of their patents is that if you just add, like, bromelain or some other protease to it, it won't do it in the same way. It'll just hack the protein up into little pieces. Those little pieces may or may not have any emulsifying capability, but they're also likely to be bitter. So, you know, unlike, you know, breaking sugars down where pretty much you're just busting it down, proteins, when they're broken down the wrong way, can produce what we call bitter polypeptides. But I'd say if you don't care about any of that, just make oat milk with standard oat stuff. Hit it with a mixture of gum arabic and xanthan to stabilize the heck out of it, because you don't have emulsifiers in it, and gum arabic will emulsify fine. And then add some oil to it, just like follow one of my recipes for like any milk, you know, for butter syrup or something like that, to emulsify a small amount of oil into the oat milk. And it should also stabilize the oat milk from separating, because you're not going to find all of the enzymes that the Oatly people do. And even if you did, you'd be infringing on their patents. So thanks, Ivan, for the MRE. Nastasia, although she didn't want to try it, gives it the thumbs up.
I tried it.
I know. You gave it the thumbs
she
up.
She had more stew than any of us.
Mm-hmm. I know. She's stew queen. Who's not? Who doesn't like stew? Find me someone who doesn't like stew, and I'll give you a person that doesn't really like living.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.